You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to the 8th episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino, here again from lovely Boulevard Park. And this is the special Halloween edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast.
Very spooky.
So we had a lot to talk about, but first wanted to talk briefly about a team that we've been ignoring for a little while, partially because they've been playing very badly.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing that we haven't been talking about them.
But that is the Seattle Sounders, and they play in a playoff game tonight, kind of a one-game sort of play-in into the playoffs. I was saying it's kind of like the baseball system. And they play against the Colorado Rapids tonight at CenturyLink at 7:30 to potentially play the Portland Timbers in the playoffs.
Which would be a big deal to have that rivalry on the playoff stage. And I'm sure that ESPN and NBC Sports Network, who are televising these, are rooting for the Sounders. They want that Sounders-Timbers matchup with all those fans. But I don't know. I mean, home field advantage is pretty big in a one-game situation. It should favor the Sounders. These teams are pretty similar on paper, obviously, as the fourth and fifth seeds. But Sounders have been so bad for such a long period of time here.
It's really strange. When we started recording this podcast about 6-7 weeks ago, the Sounders were really on a high. Yeah. It looked like they were going to run to the MLS Cup pretty easily. They were the hottest team. They just added Clint Dempsey. They were winning game after game, and then just the wheels fall off the bus.
It was kind of bizarre. I mean, you know, there's been some chemistry issues, obviously, trying to get Dempsey has been in and out of the lineup with injuries. Oba Martins has been out of the lineup with injuries. And there just hasn't been, Brad Evans has been playing with the national team and Eddie Johnson. And Eddie Johnson had injuries while playing with the national team. So there's a lot of that. But really, I mean, the offense has not been good, but the defense just completely fell apart inexplicably.
Yeah, last time they played Colorado was in Colorado, and they lost 5-1.
Yeah, they kind of kicked it off, and then gave up 4 goals at home to Vancouver in the next game. Kind of have gotten it together defensively since then.
That was really rough. What seed are the Timbers in the playoffs?
They're the number one seed.
They're the number one seed. Yeah. So, at the very least, the situation doesn't seem quite like what it was when we started recording this on September 13th,
we
were just about to go to that RSL game that they won and I think put them
in first place.
Yeah. And then everything's collapsed since then. But the possibility of being one of the lowest seeds and taking down the Timbers as the number one seed going into the playoffs is an awesome possibility.
Yeah, and you know the thing about soccer is it's wildly unpredictable, as we've seen from the contrast of those two stretches. So anything can happen in these two-leg aggregate series. And I think last year the Galaxy made a run from playing in this play-in game to eventually win the MLS Cup. So that's the goal for the Sounders, is to try to do the same.
Yeah, so it's basically go Sounders tonight.
One bright spot from the draw against the Galaxy on Sunday, where the Sounders had a chance to avoid this and get into the regular playoffs.
They
failed to do with a 1-1 draw where they actually should have lost. They conceded a second goal that was inexplicably not counted.
Really?
Yeah. But Clint Dempsey scored. Well, he's off the schneid.
That was exciting. I guess you have to hope that next year is Clint Dempsey's year. Maybe he'll put it together in the playoffs, and Clint Dempsey will really emerge as the player that they were expecting when they claimed him, signed him.
I mean, it's really not that uncommon. The Seattle Times wrote about this a few weeks ago. A lot of these guys who are big names who come over mid-season, they're not in game shape, they don't have any chemistry with the team, and they struggle their first year before doing a lot better the second year. We saw that with Thierry Henry, Beckham, guys like that. So it's not uncommon, but obviously it would be nice if Dempsey did go off in the playoffs.
Yeah, that would be exciting. And then also, anything else about the Sounders?
I think that's it.
Also, yesterday was the NBA kickoff, opening night in the NBA, which feels like it was a long time coming. Felt like we were waiting for the NBA season forever. But really wanted to talk about for a second, obviously. There was no Sonics game last night, and I want to mention that in just a little bit. But do you have any memories of notable Sonics opening nights?
I mean, I don't know that there's a ton that really stand out to me. There's a few that stand out for, like, the most bizarre reasons. Like, I really remember 2000 opening night because I believe it was the 35th anniversary, or no, it was the anniversary of Barry Ackerley buying the team, and they rolled back the prices on concessions.
On opening night?
Yeah, that's what I remember really well. And then also 2003-04, which was my second year working for the team. Well, 2002-03, I remember a lot. My first year working as an intern for the team, my first opening night, had a bunch of legends in town. So I interviewed Spencer Haywood and Michael Cage and a handful of other players. I think Steve Scheffler may have been in there. So that was kind of my first chance to interview Sonics players that I had watched growing up. So that was a lot of fun.
Was Gus Williams around?
He probably was.
I'm wearing my Gus Williams shirt today.
Yeah, that's...
In celebration of if this were to be the Sonics opening night. I'm just going to pretend in my mind the whole day. I might start telling people that I'm going. It seems like the Sonics have played a lot of opening nights on the road. It's really strange for a team, especially I was looking during the mid-90s, they continually played on the road and have lost a lot of those games. In the 95-96 season, which obviously was the Sonics' best season, they lost in the first game on the road, I believe at Utah, which was kind of surprising to me, and then came back home, and this is one of my better memories of opening night. So we just got the season tickets. It was our first year in 1995. I was 10, so I don't have that many memories of the game itself, but I remember walking into the seats and being like, we're going to be here every single game. And I think they went 38-3 at home that year also.
Yeah, I didn't attend a home loss in the regular season.
In the regular season. We used to draft out the games before the year because there were two of us. And so we had to split up the games evenly and would choose. I don't know how we chose who got the first pick, but go back and forth drafting out the games and picking them. And I probably picked Chicago with the first pick.
I don't know. You think you picked that over opening night?
I'm pretty sure that I did. So I went to both of those.
Yeah,
I went to the Chicago game, which is on a Sunday night, and Gary Payton had a big steal to win the game. And I also went to opening night. You might have had some sort of mathlete thing, some sort of math club thing going on.
That could have been. I don't know. I know I went to the second game, which was not nearly as exciting.
To game two. Some notable draft picks through there. You always wanted Utah. Because Utah was such an exciting game. I think the Lakers were probably still a little bit exciting, but there was a time period where the Lakers weren't really a team that we feared in any way between Magic and before Shaq.
Well, that was only that one season.
There was this season right here?
No, we had season tickets, because Shaq came the next
year. Okay, and I do remember some pretty notable Sunday morning games when the Lakers were playing. But also, Houston was a really big game then, and that would have been a high draft pick.
Phoenix.
And Phoenix, I distinctly remember also going to every single home loss that year.
Yeah.
And I know that one of them was hosting the Knicks and hosting the Pacers. Pacers went off. It was like November 28th of that year. I remember this pretty well because it was the first time that I'd ever seen a home loss, I think. It was kind of a devastating experience.
So it was your version of me watching the Huskies lose at Arizona in 92 or 93.
For the first time. Since then, since that Lakers first game that I went to, and I remember McDonald's had a special like 6 chicken nuggets because there didn't used to be a 4-piece back in 1995. It was a 6-piece chicken nuggets for like 89 cents. And what has inflation done? Now we only get 4 for 99 cents. And I remember getting just like a shit ton of chicken nuggets and going down there and putting them into my jacket and eating them inside the game, which when you're 10 years old is like the real like act of criminality. Taking chicken nuggets into the basketball arena that you're not supposed to. I remember all of this really specifically. And I think that we'd met them beforehand, but some folks who ended up becoming pretty good friends with you, Joseph Evans and his mom had the seats next to us.
I don't think we met them. I think that was the first time.
That was the first time. So yeah. I remember meeting them being like, hey, how's it going? And Joseph was right around your age and a big basketball fan. So that was kind of an awesome experience, having season tickets next to other season ticket holders, which I don't know. It happens at Seahawks games all the time where you get to know the people around you because pretty much everybody there is a season ticket holder. But I've had seats at Sonics games where it was constantly rotating.
Yeah, I think that worked out really well, that we just were very compatible in terms of interests and became friends pretty quickly.
And then, I mean, you two are still pretty good friends. He's a lawyer in Tacoma right now.
Still chat from time to time on GChat and are friends on Facebook.
And what do you do now?
Okay, I've looked at this, and I think my first pick in the 95-96 draft had to have been the Magic. Because I know I was at that game where Gary Payton got ejected, but the Sonics still pulled out a 199 victory.
Oh, wow. And you think you took that with the first pick? I mean, Shaq together were a pretty exciting combo at that
and
time.
Penny was my favorite player who wasn't on the Sonics, so that would have been a big game for me. I think you probably had the first pick and took one of those two.
I had to have taken Chicago.
And then I took Orlando, and then you took the other.
Because, I mean, I'd seen Michael Jordan before, but only that one time when they played at... Where was that, at the Tacoma Dome?
They played at the Kingdom.
At the Kingdom. So that was the only time, and we were miles away.
Yeah.
That was in the 92-93 season.
It was earlier than that, I think so.
And we got tickets when they, because they would play sometimes play big games at the Kingdom.
Yeah, and just saw like 40,000 seats, and you couldn't see anything, but you were there.
I remember being as far away as possible and being like, I'm pretty sure that's Michael Jordan, and he dunked like one time, and it was a really riveting moment, but I hadn't seen Michael Jordan before at all, and so I had to have taken that.
Yeah, I mean, even with Jordan coming off his retirement, and, like, we didn't know that they were going to be, like, the 72-10 team,
And then, obviously, we ended up seeing quite a bit of him in the playoffs, but too much of Michael Jordan in the playoffs.
Well, I didn't see as much as you. His mom lost the tickets.
It's true. Our mom lost the tickets game 3.
Yeah.
And so you got there in, like, the fourth quarter.
Halftime.
Halftime.
They were already down 20.
What a great era we live in now, where you can lose the tickets and just get a new set immediately after. You could just print them off the computer. That was a really terrible time period, being in 1995, where if you lost your tickets, you were screwed.
Things have gotten a lot better since then.
But even looking through since then, I have no recollections of any of these opening nights. And, I mean, I was at all of these games in the 2000s. Basically, from 2000 until the team moved, I would have been at every single one. And Phoenix Suns on October 30th, 2002? No idea. No recollection of that one. The season that we were good, 03-04, I know we lost on the road.
That was
Clippers.
04-05.
And then, or 04-05, and then we beat the Hawks on opening night. No recollection of that one.
See, I remember all of these from, like, things I did covering the team.
Wasn't there a game where the alarm went off, or...
That was 03-04, which, so they opened in Japan and played two games there.
And Rashard Lewis had his career high.
Yeah, it's scored 50 points.
And then the alarm went off at Key Arena.
Yeah, that was a big problem for the game ops folks. It was on national TV. It was on ESPN opening night, and the alarm goes off. Whoops!
Oh, the game was on national TV.
Yeah,
and you had become friends with the game ops people at that point.
I think I've only heard about this like after the fact. Okay. I knew them, but
I mean, it's not quite the Super Bowl with the power going out, but
no, but
that was still kind of rough. Any other memories from opening night? What is with NBA opening night? Why do we not care? Why is none of this registering? I mean,
well,
I remember.
I mean,
there are 82
game seasons.
It's true.
That's the opening night is a bigger deal. Like, I mean, I guess it's a big deal in baseball where they have 162 game seasons. But like, there, your number one starter is always going. It's always a big matchup. Like in the NBA, it could be just you play and you lose to the Clippers. That's it.
It's true. Or you play and you are the Clippers and you lose to the Lakers.
Well, in that case.
And everybody panics.
That you might remember. Like, I do not remember the 2005-06 opener against the Clippers where the Sonics lost whatsoever. The other one I do remember would be 06-07 because it was Portland and Brandon Roy made his NBA debut and pretty much single-handedly beat the Sonics.
I think I was probably cheering for Brandon Roy in that game.
Yeah, that's probably a fair decision.
I have no recollection of that one either. I was thinking of the different sports, though, and NBA opening night is one of the least interesting opening nights of all of them. Like, Major League Baseball opening day, they make a really big deal out of it. It's a full day. They do the Sunday night opening now, and it's usually the Red Sox and the Yankees. And the NFL does that Thursday night kickoff, which is a big game. But in the NBA, it just kind of happens.
It'd be a big deal if you were one of the Tuesday night games. I mean, obviously, like, Miami, you're getting your championship rings. That's a big deal, but... You know, if you're playing your home opener, like on the Blazers play on Saturday night, it'll be a fairly big game because it's San Antonio, but it's not like a huge matchup otherwise. And it's already going to be two games into the season for that.
And you're going down there for that game?
I am going down there for that
game. To go see the Blazers. So I had to think, what if, let's say that everything that played out with the Kings last year came up aces for Seattle, went exactly the opposite way of how it went, and the team had moved here, and we were, it would probably be tonight, having the first opening night that we've had since the team moved. I feel like that would be the greatest day of my entire life.
How many times have
I said on this podcast what the greatest day of my entire life was?
And never has it been about the birth of your child or getting married.
Top five. it would be... such an exciting day. I would be wearing this exact shirt. That's what I'm just preparing as if it's happening. But the excitement, I was thinking, I was like, I don't care who would be on the team just going to a basketball game. They could have Jan Vesely. They could have Kevin Burleson, Terrence Williams, Austin Rivers, an unretired Flip Murray. I would be so thrilled to see that team. They could have Shamon Williams come back, Vin Baker during his alcohol problems. It doesn't matter who it is, as long as we were going to a Sonics game, that would be so exciting.
This is all true. I feel like I have to, like, not think about it. I'm taking the opposite strategy. Like, every once in a while, I'll be like, oh, hey, yeah, there would be an opening night tonight if the team had moved here, and it takes me to a dark place, and I don't want to think about it.
You're in a better situation, though, because there's this feeling of being in an NBA arena where you're there, and there's so much excitement before these games, and it's, like, it's different than any other sport. Being in an NBA arena before the games, you get more hyped up, even than the NFL. The NFL just kind of starts, but it kind of builds. In the NFL, NBA starts big, and then it slows way, way down, and then it gets exciting at the very end.
And the other thing about the NFL is it's such a great television sport.
Yeah.
Like, you can get hyped just watching the game at home, but, like, NBA, yeah, it's got to be in the arena.
When something happens, people get so excited, and you can see it really clearly. You can't necessarily see a big play in the NFL that clearly sometimes.
You definitely can't see, like, players' reactions to it.
And it's also because it's much smaller arenas. But that excitement of being in an NBA arena, you're still getting that by going to Portland. But I'm not going to Portland this weekend. You know, I'm not going to be there for an opening night. So you're still getting that experience that's not happening here and hasn't happened here. I mean, how many games have I been to since the Sonics moved? You're talking about going from 41 games, plus potentially the playoffs, down to, I don't know, 2 games a year, maybe 6 games ever since they've moved.
So what you're saying is you would like to have an NBA back in Seattle.
It would be the greatest. It would be the most exciting moment. And it would be the most exciting moment not just for me, but there's so many people who, I know when they announced that when they had the interest for season tickets, so many people said that they wanted to buy season tickets. The demand would be through the roof.
The unfortunate thing, and you know, obviously it would have been terrible to take a team away from Sacramento, and now we get the chance to hope for maybe an expansion and a better outcome in that regard, but it was kind of the perfect time because enough time had passed that the bitterness of the way the team moved has kind of eased, and people that were like, you know, I'm done with the NBA, I think have come back for the most part. And the nostalgia right now is so strong about the Kemp Payton teams.
It really is strange. Seattle is really full of nostalgia right now.
I mean, I think part of it is, like, the Sonics haven't lost a game in 5 years. Undefeated. You can't get upset. You can't be like, oh, what a terrible draft pick. You know, like, the Mariners keep losing games and making terrible decisions and becoming less popular all the time.
That's true.
The Sonics can't do that.
The Sonics can only basically become more popular.
Yeah.
It's true.
Unless, like, people, you know, it gets to the point where, like, there's a whole generation of people that don't even remember them. That's the only possibility.
Yeah, I guess that's the biggest concern. But there are still young people. And that was one of the other things that I was thinking, is in the time period since the Sonics left, a lot of people that we know, and as Seattle basketball in itself with all the players who are coming out, it's reached a peak right now. So many people that we know have become bigger basketball fans now than they were when the Sonics left and when the Sonics were here.
It's just prime for it. So that's, you know, I hope if it's 4 years from today that the Sonics come back, I hope that we're still at that place and ready to embrace them in the same way.
I mean, we will be, but that's a long time from now. 4 years from today?
I mean, that is a long time, but, you know, we've gone 5 already.
I could be 50 years old by then.
Your grasp of math is not strong.
I might be dead.
That is a legitimate possibility.
Has basketball become cooler in the last 5 years? Really think it has. What made basketball cooler?
I mean, the whole Miami thing and getting over LeBron being a villain and just embracing him as a great player, I think, is a lot of it. And, you know, I mean, it's a good group of young stars. Unfortunately, one of those guys should be playing here in Kevin Durant. But
never heard of him.
Yeah. It's a very good group of players right now. And I think that wasn't necessarily the case in, like, the late 90s or the early 2000s, the young stars.
I really, really think that basketball is, like, it's the sport, it's always been the coolest sport, right? Right this second, though, it is the coolest sport, and we want to be a part of it. We're a cool city.
We are.
We need to be a part of it, even if Jan Vesely is also a part of it. Even if the expansion draft, and they're going to an expansion team, it was just Jan Vesely and Austin Rivers.
Poor Jan Vesely taking a beating in this podcast.
Anything?
So you asked me to together a list of players to follow this season.
Yeah, so I was thinking that would be a good way for us to, maybe we can talk about one per week. That'll last us 10 weeks. We can talk about one player per week, or we can just kind of check in on them occasionally. But the players who I'll try to watch when watching League Pass, I'm assuming that they're going to be League Pass type players. You're not going to tell me, like, Kobe Bryant. Players tomorrow, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James.
Yes,
Dwight Howard.
That's the direction I've gone. So, guys that you may not know as well as I do from obsessively following the league and going to summer league and all sorts of things like that.
So I'm curious, and I thought that would be an interesting way for us to talk about, because we don't want to talk about basketball in general, but maybe just targeting some of the more specific interesting players and seeing what they're doing. So let's hear your 10 players. Let me try to guess what team they play for, too.
So we're going to do a who he play for?
Yeah.
Who he play for?
I think that I'll know them all is my guess. But you name a player, I'll guess who he plays for.
You might miss one of these. I think there's one of these that you don't know. All right, the first one is my favorite player to watch at Summer League, the Atlanta Hawks rookie Dennis Schroeder.
And you said the team name, so that was bad, because I was going to guess that he was on the Knicks.
Oh, yeah, you would have been way up.
Dennis Schroeder.
Okay, well, you can guess his ethnicity.
He's German and black. I know those things.
Okay, we've gone over that.
Yeah, we've gone over that. My perception of Dennis Schroeder, he looked like Dirk Nowitzki when I first heard of him in my head, so I was pretty far off. And he's a German point guard.
And kind of like a smaller Rajon Rondo in many ways. Has enormous hands, loves making flashy passes, can't shoot whatsoever. Now he can a little bit. He's going to turn the ball over a lot. He'll probably be kind of terrible as a rookie, but
where would you put him on the Tony Roten scale?
If the scale is like Tony Roten to, I don't know, who's the other end? Ricky Rubio?
Sure.
Like someone who does all those things but does them successfully, then he's probably about halfway in between, I would say.
He's a half Roten.
Yeah, at this point.
Okay. I'm excited for that. Who's next?
Kemba Walker.
He's on the Charlotte Bobcats still, I'm assuming.
So in his third year in the league, and I think a major breakout candidate this year, he played really well last year, but no one paid that much attention because he was on such a terrible team. The Bobcats will be a little bit better, I think, this year, and I think he's got a chance to push even for an all-star spot.
Really?
Yeah, he's going to put up some big numbers. Staying with the same college team, Andre Drummond.
Can't wait to watch Andre Drummond. And the whole Pistons team. Is he the only Piston that you have on your list?
He is the only Piston. I don't think I put two players from any team. I spread them out.
You could just put the whole Pistons team. I can't wait to see Drummond and Greg Monroe and Josh Smith all together, plus Brandon Jennings.
I'm extra excited about this because Shaney is all in on the Pistons, picking them for 50 wins and fifth in the East.
Wow. Who are some of Andre Drummond's most comparable players?
The list, you know, it ends up being guys who are just dominant superstars. I think it's like Shaq and Shaq doesn't show up because Shaq didn't come into the league until older, but I think Dwight Howard is number one on his list, and then
Dwight Howard. David Robinson, is he on there?
Again, wasn't in the league yet because he didn't come in the league until he was like 23 or 24. That's what's scary.
He was in the Navy.
He literally was. He was like 19. So the rest of his list is not as good because there's just not any. So Kevin Garnett is on there, but also Anders Bjelland and Anthony Randolph. But he's already miles ahead of those guys, so I'm not worried about that, except his free throw shooting, which is terrible. All right, next on the list, a guy who is popular for his sideline antics as much as his play, Kent Bazemore.
On Oakland. Golden State Warriors.
I like that you refer to them as Oakland.
Yeah, I'm going to continue doing that, I think.
San Francisco does not.
I kind of like that. Are they moving to San Francisco?
They're trying to.
I don't like that at all.
It would kind of take away some of their fan base and how cool it's been over the last few years.
But I'm excited to watch Kent Bazemore. We saw him in the preseason, and I thought he was pretty cool.
And he's got an awesome name. That's just a lot to like about the whole Kent Bazemore experience. We'll see how much he actually plays this year, because they got a ton of guards.
Yes.
When he does, it's worth watching. Next on the list, a guy who just was announced as a starter for his team, Patrick Beverley.
Patrick Beverley for Houston, the Houston Rockets?
Yeah, he beat up Jeremy Lin.
I saw that he was announced as a starter. I saw that Chandler Parsons did the announcing of it, too.
He did.
The unofficial GM, Chandler Parsons.
And PR. He's just handling all things now for the Rockets. Patrick Beverley is maybe the most
athletic.
You're
going to have to send this list to me because I'm not going to memorize this.
I will do that. Okay. He's maybe the most athletic point guard in the league. It's either him or Eric Bledsoe. And Bledsoe gets called mini LeBron, and Beverley has some of those same things. Like, we put together a thing for ESPN the magazine looking at where Bledsoe rates among guards and like offensive rebound rate and block rate, where he's obviously up at the top of all of those, but so is Patrick Beverley. Very similar player, except he can shoot threes too.
How mini LeBron are we talking for Eric Bledsoe? That's a pretty small LeBron.
It's like if you shrunk him down to 6'1".
Okay.
And like
literally
has the same
size wise.
Yeah,
mini LeBron.
But like chiseled frame, but just at 6'1" instead of 6'8".
Okay, Patrick Beverley. And he was undrafted, right?
He was drafted in the second round. He was actually drafted by Miami.
Oh, really? Oh, I remember when he was on Miami.
And with the pick they got from the Lakers. So he could have played for the Lakers, could have played for Miami, but they cut him in training camp. He wasn't quite this good yet. And Houston kept an eye on him and signed him midseason last year.
That's
for the
awesome.
Minimum. He's making the minimum for the next 2 years.
That's really
best contract. One of the best contracts in the league. All right, next up on the list, a no-brainer, maybe even the reason for this list, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, I knew he would be on there.
That was a no-brainer. Yes. A Greek freak.
I was just listening to the Bill Simmons and Joe House Over-Under podcast, and they kept talking about Giannis. I was like, yeah, he has to be on there. So excited about Giannis. And I was thinking about this, because I was looking at an old NFL draft Wikipedia page, which is the most exciting thing to look at. And this most recent NFL draft, it said that there were the most foreign players ever selected, with like six. And I was thinking about how like the NFL just doesn't translate to the rest of the world, really, because they don't play football. But the NBA, the type of body size that you're, and like the type of freak athletes that you're choosing from, is literally the entire world. 6 billion people. I think maybe even almost 7 billion people.
That's some population stats.
Yeah. It's a stats podcast. Almost 7 billion people in the world. But yeah, the type of like body size and just freaks of human beings that there are in the entire world, it's pretty exciting. And somebody like Giannis Antetokounmpo. Antetokounmpo.
I don't know if that's right, but I pronounce it very confidently.
Yeah, that's what all that matters. I'm really excited to watch him.
And the Bucks, as they talked about on the Simmons House podcast, at Bill Simmons' bequest, set up an alert for whenever it gets in the game. So I'm following that on Twitter now.
Are you? And it's not just the Milwaukee Bucks Twitter. It's a separate
Twitter.
Giannis Twitter.
You don't get any tweets except when the Greek freak checks into the game.
That's
which
awesome.
Is an amazing idea.
That's really cool. Love the future.
You can set that up to get text, too.
Can you? Yeah. Oh, yeah, because that means Twitter. But the other thing is that I want something like that for NFL Red Zone. It's completely unrelated. But I want something like that from NFL Red Zone where every single game, when it tells you when it comes back from commercial.
Ooh.
So that if you're watching the Seahawks game or whatever, your home team's game, and then you flip over to NFL Red Zone to watch in between, because that's what you should do when watching football. And then I want to be alerted when it comes back from commercial so I'm not missing any plays, plus seeing as much NFL Red Zone as possible.
I know, I think that's a little too time sensitive. Like the Antetokounmpo thing, you can tune in 30 seconds later and it works. If you don't see the tweet for 30 seconds, then the whole point is lost.
Well, it's something. It could be the first step.
All right, well, we'll look into that.
Okay, I don't know what we're going to do.
All right, next on my list, a player who could have played with Giannis Antetokounmpo, if not for a trade last year, Tobias Harris.
Tobias Harris. He's on the Magic.
That is correct.
Yes.
He actually is not playing right now because of an injury and has been coming off the bench for them in preseason. But a very talented scorer who I think has, you know, big-time potential.
Tennessee?
He did go to Tennessee. If he can play defense at all, he's going to be really good.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about this Tobias Harris. I remember when he was at Tennessee, but I don't know anything about him.
He also is named Tobias, which is always fun.
That's true.
All right, next on the list, here's the person I think you're least likely to get
all right.
who you play for. Archie Goodwin.
Archie Goodwin. I've never heard of this person.
He was at Kentucky last year.
I knew that he went to Kentucky.
Big time recruit. Kind of disappointed in his first season.
Okay, I have to guess something. I'm going to guess that he's on the Indiana Pacers.
No.
Not even close. Oh, okay.
He's on the Phoenix Suns.
Oh.
And so they drafted him with the second to last pick.
You're
in the
setting
first
me
round.
Up to watch the Phoenix Suns at some point.
Well, they also have Bledsoe, who could have easily been on this list.
Maybe LeBron.
Despite as terrible as they are, they still will be somewhat entertaining to watch. Because
I like Eric Bledsoe. I feel like he's being underrated right now.
I also like Eric Bledsoe. So they have those two Kentucky guys who are fun to watch, and maybe at some point they'll play together a little bit. He was very good in the summer league. My stats hated him coming out of college, but I think they hated Bledsoe too, and I think may be wrong about him same way.
Interesting.
All right, next on the list. Maybe a little bit too big for this list, even. Jonas Valančiūnas.
Oh, yeah. Jonas, and he plays on the Raptors.
Yes.
Yes. I'm excited. I've never seen him play before, but people always talk about him.
I've loved him for a long time. Like, before I'd even seen him play, I loved him just based on his stats. And then I watched a bunch of film on him before the draft and loved him even more.
This is his second season, correct? That he's
yeah, and
to?
Last year he didn't play a ton. Dwayne Casey was a little hesitant to trust him, played Aaron Gray, a journeyman, over him. But this year, Jonas is starting from day one. He was the MVP of the summer league, just dominated down there, and he's going to be really good.
Who are his comparables? Who would you, even if you don't have your Shaney comparables, who would you project him to be like?
I mean, I don't know if I have a good answer for that. So Cheney says Bogut, Chandler, Serge Ibaka, and Derek Favors, who incidentally is the next person on this list.
Derek Favors?
Yeah, the last person on this list. But obviously just good young players. I don't know. It's weird because he's really tall, but his best skill isn't like posting up. He can post up and did that in summer league, but he's really good at running the pick and roll. And just catches the ball well on the move, finishes in traffic. So I don't know if I have a good comp for him, but he's going
to
be good.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see him. And then the last one is Derek Favors.
Yep.
And he's going into a season where he kind of has to become a star or it's never going to happen.
I think he will. He just got a big lucrative extension from the Jazz, heading off the possibility of him doing that and becoming a really valuable free agent. He's my pick for most improved player, although a few guys on this list, along with Anthony Davis, could be pretty good contenders for that. But, you know, I think he's got Defensive Player of the Year potential, and he's going to show that this year.
I think Anthony Davis is going to be awesome this year. If he's healthy the whole year, he's going to be a star. He's going to make the All-Star team.
I am very confident in that happening. He's a little bit too good for this.
And Derek Favors plays for the Jazz.
He does.
That's 9 out of 10.
Well, I didn't give you the chance to guess the first one. You said you were going to be wrong.
Dennis Schroeder?
Yeah.
I would not have gotten that one. Okay.
But still, I think that's... I don't know. We'd see. I'd be curious how Charles Barkley would have done on that, who he played for.
Those are some obscure players. So we've spent a long time talking about this.
Way too long.
But maybe... Let's just check back in next week after 1 week. I'm going to try to pull them up. League Pass has a free preview. So I'm going to try to watch as much basketball this week as I possibly can and hopefully see all these players and especially watch the Detroit Pistons play.
It should be fun.
That's what I'm looking forward to. But now we turn back to more comfortable things for us, where we usually are here. And
yeah, it's really uncomfortable for me to talk about the NBA.
You just don't know how to do it.
Struggling. Somehow I made it through.
A sport where I know what team most of the players play for. But looking at the Seahawks, this weekend we play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Last weekend coming off the victory against the Rams last Monday night. Do you want to break down the Buccaneers for 1 second or anything that stood out by looking at them?
Well, they're not very good.
Okay.
They're really bad at offense. Mike Glennon has not been as bad as I thought he would rate. He's actually not a little bit below average. One thing that stands out, he's fumbled a couple of times, and I think he's started like 4 games, so I'm going to predict the Seahawks are going to cause him to fumble this.
They're going to cause him to fumble?
That's my prediction.
You think they'll get to him? It looks like they're like 30th in offense per DVOA, and are they worse on the run or the pass?
Pretty even.
Pretty even.
On defense, they have much bigger splits.
They have much bigger run-pass splits. First, the Tampa Bay offense, I would probably predict... Seahawks should intercept Mike Glennon at least once.
Yeah, I think 2 turnovers is a reasonable expectation.
And I think they have an interception in every game this season, so I wouldn't... Maybe did they pick off Cam Newton? I think they did.
Yeah.
But I would definitely assume one or two picks. They should get to him. They're without Doug Martin and running Mike James, who's a rookie out of Miami, I believe. And he was terrible last week against Carolina. Carolina, who's kind of a similarly structured team as Seattle... They're not quite as good on defense as Seattle is, but they destroyed that Tampa Bay offense.
And the Buccaneers are really close to quitting, so I feel like if you get up a couple of touchdowns early in the game, it is over.
I mean, right now they're playing without their starting quarterback, without their starting running back. A lot of their offensive line is out. There's nothing going for them offensively.
And they just hate playing for Greg Schiano.
Everybody hates Greg Schiano.
So unless it turns out to be 44 miniature Greg Schianos playing is... in SB Nation's Breaking Madden last week, then I don't like the Buccaneers' chances.
I'm hoping that happens.
I also.
That would be notable.
Mini Ditka.
I would tell people that I was at the 44 Schiano game. They have Vincent Jackson at wide receiver. It's the only bright spot on their offense. He's played pretty well this season.
Yeah, you'd want to see Sherman matched up with him as much as possible to just take away the jump ball that they like to throw. I mean, I don't think the Seahawks are going to be
Both of the corners should be able to defend that. Browner with his size. I mean, Vincent Jackson's not the fastest player in the league anymore. And so Brandon Browner with his size can match up against Vincent Jackson pretty well. I think they're fine having each of the corners. Browner's been really good lately also. I mean, we didn't talk about it on Monday, but did you see Browner give up anything in that game on Monday night?
Not really.
I think he struggled a little bit coming back from injury, but now he's been... I mean, we haven't noticed anything with him, which is usually a good thing for quarterbacks.
Exactly, that's what you're hoping for.
And then so they have big splits defensively.
Yeah, they're third in terms of rushing defense DVOA, but 24th against the pass. So I don't think that's ideal for the Seahawks, since obviously you'd like to get Marshawn Lynch going and not have to worry about protecting Russell Wilson. But the upside is they're only 23rd in adjusted sack rate this year, not nearly the kind of pass rush that we saw last week with St. Louis or even with Arizona the week before. So, you know, I think that should be a little better. Russell Wilson will have more time to throw it and maybe pick out some receivers.
They've been playing against some pretty spectacular rush defenses and pass rush defenses lately. I think it's kind of lost because of how terrible the offensive line has been, and we kind of just blame the offensive line and not necessarily credit that they have Robert Quinn, J.J. Watt, you know, Calais Campbell, folks like that, John Abraham. So hopefully Russell won't take very many hits. Your goal is to, I mean, establish the run is always kind of a crazy thing to say. I know that a lot of folks are really wanting them to run the ball this week, Marshawn Lynch included.
Marshawn Lynch fantasy owners included.
I think that Pete Carroll is they're going to work to get Marshawn Lynch the ball this week. He's gonna get 20 carries unless they go way up really early. Marshawn Lynch is gonna get the ball even if they have a good rush defense, and the hope is that it just doesn't matter. You know?
Well, that's where if you break them, if they quit, then
last week against the Panthers, I think that might be more of a historical thing, but when you look recently, Cam Newton was at 4.5 yards per carry, D'Angelo Williams 5.4 yards per carry, and Mike Tolbert at 5 yards per carry. So Carolina was able to run the ball against Tampa Bay last week. They have a good rushing attack, but it's not all that dissimilar from what the Seahawks are doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened last week is definitely the game plan for the Seahawks in terms of going against Tampa Bay.
I'm kind of noticing Carolina's kind of like Seahawks Jr. right now, and they are scary.
They are really good.
Carolina is, we're 1 year ahead of them. Carolina is the Seahawks last year. With maybe some strength at slightly different positions. They don't have the secondary for it right now. And the Seahawks have the strength of the secondary. And the Panthers' main strength is the D-line and Luke Kuechly. But the Panthers are a damn good team. And they're kind of mirroring what the Seahawks are doing. They don't have spectacular wide receivers. They have a good rushing attack. They have a star mobile quarterback. I like what the Panthers are doing.
I'm glad the Seahawks played them when they did.
Yeah,
Ron Rivera came to Jesus on fourth downs.
And now they have a defensive-minded coach who might be a good coach now. But they were able to run on Tampa Bay. I think that at some point when your offense just can't do anything, the defensive line is not going to be as amped up as those other defensive lines have been. I mean, we were playing Arizona in their home. We were playing St. Louis in their home. They're playing the best team in division. That's probably the best team they played all season. Tampa Bay, they just don't care.
That's the hope.
Right?
That's the goal.
I mean, and so I think that even though they have been good against the run, I would still expect Marshawn Lynch to get the ball a lot. And I would probably expect a good game out of him also.
I think so, too. I think he's primed for it.
Chances of victory against the Buccaneers?
90%.
Yeah. I we're sounding stupid by putting it that high. It's not, at least I'm not picking a score. It's like 45-7. It's chances of victory is a much softer way of doing it.
I mean, I don't think Tampa Bay is as good as St. Louis, even with Kelvin Clemens.
No, Tampa Bay is nowhere near as good as St. Louis. They're one of the worst teams in the league.
And you're at home.
And St. Louis was just playing without their starting quarterback. They didn't get a star running back midway through the season. Like
you keep saying this, like the Buccaneers quarterback is hurt, as opposed to we decided to run him off and tarnish his reputation on his way out of town, so we couldn't even trade him.
I think Greg Schiano killed him. I'm pretty sure, if I recall correctly, it's a real train wreck over there in Tampa Bay in Greg Schiano's last season.
Yeah, it's funny because of the fact that the similarities to Raheem Morris' last season, which was 2 years ago. How did this happen twice in 3 years?
He should have been fired already. I wonder where Greg Schiano will coach next year. Is the Rice job available? That's like right up his wheelhouse, someplace like that.
I think he's got to be on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah. You know, Rice is in Texas?
Yeah, that's
way off. Way off. What a guess.
You think of Temple?
Maybe. Any of those jobs. That range of school, that's perfect for Greg Schiano.
Yeah, I mean,
he has to be somewhere like Rutgers, but lower. I would say it's about 90% also, though. Things aren't good there for the Buccaneers. And Seahawks are playing at home where they haven't lost for 2 years.
I think the one thing that came out of Monday night's game that we didn't have a chance to discuss was the news yesterday that Sidney Rice tore his ACL and is out for the season. It's a bad week for wide receivers in the city of Seattle. Kaysen Williams is almost certainly out for the season after breaking his leg on Saturday, and then Rice goes down.
Yeah, it was weird. There were two, extreme injuries that didn't look that bad at the time. I thought it was kind of weird of Sidney Rice. I was listening to the Pete Carroll Coaches Show on Tuesday morning, and Pete was saying that they held Sidney out because of concussion-like symptoms. And then I got a text that Rice was out with an ACL tear. I was like, that's weird. That's not at all what Pete was talking about. I know that he initially got hurt with the ACL, but then they kept him out because of the concussion-like symptoms, and they were being cautious about that. And then it comes back that he had a torn ACL, and I was like, would they have played him with this? And then Kaysen on that catch, I mean, it was clear that because he stayed down as long as he did, that Kaysen was pretty seriously injured. How do you think that affects... we'll start with the Huskies first. How do you think that affects the Huskies going forward? Because I was thinking that it didn't affect them that much, and you...
I'm much more worried about it than you are, which I think that in terms of going three wide, the Huskies are fine because, you know, obviously Jadon Mickens stepped into a larger role as a deep threat against Cal. We'll see whether that continues against competent Pac-12 teams. So you've got him. You've got John Ross is able to step in as kind of a third wide receiver to complement those guys. But then it's when you're starting to rotate your depth in there that it becomes a problem. Marvin Hall had a couple of drops on Saturday against Cal. Demoree Stringfellow is still very young. DeAndre Campbell was ineffective last season, as we talked about a little bit when we did the wide receiver breakdown of that, of looking at Kaysen Williams last year. So I'm concerned about that.
What do you think about the chances of Austin Safarian Jenkins splitting out wide a la Jimmy Graham or somebody like that?
Could be. I don't know. That'll be interesting. Now, the one nice thing for the Huskies standpoint is they've got this bye week, and then Colorado is an opportunity to probably experiment a little bit before you get into that UCLA-Oregon State stretch that's going to define the season.
And they also have their second tight end, Josh Perkins, who's a converted wide receiver. So, I mean, he can kind of play both of those positions. I still think there's so much depth there. I mean, really, you're losing your third highest receiver. You're losing your third highest receiver. He's not gaining the most yards per catch of anybody on the team. Kaysen's obviously a good receiver, but a little bit of that is kind of just building off of the hype that he had coming in and the season that he had last year. But right now, I feel more confident in Jadon Mickens than I do in Kaysen Williams.
Well, it's interesting because Mickens was used so differently against Cal than previously. He had been catching a lot of passes at the line of scrimmage and just trying to use his speed to break them. So his yards per catch, per target, had actually been lower than Kaysen Williams and Kevin Smith is the more traditional wide receivers. But that went up quite a bit in that Cal game.
And then Sidney Rice. So Sidney Rice obviously gone for the year. Potential of Percy Harvin coming back this week. Seems like they're probably going to hold him out one more week. It's because there was talk of a setback last week. So it seems like maybe he'll give it a go, maybe not. But losing Sidney Rice, again, really, really similar situation as Kaysen Williams. He's your third leading receiver. He has as many receptions as Marshawn Lynch has right now. He's not gaining a ton on there. He's not catching the ball that well. I mean, Sidney Rice has had a rough season so far. But how do you think that'll affect the Seahawks going forward?
You know, I think it's partially a depth issue because it's going to force Jermaine Kearse is going to be out on the field a lot next week. And even Brian Walters, I assume, is going to see some time as the fourth wide receiver if Percy Harmon isn't able to come back. So that's testing your depth a little bit. We saw Jermaine Kearse drop a pass. You know, there's a reason that he was an undrafted free agent as well as he's played this year.
His surgery didn't help him out on that third down.
You're asking a lot of him to suddenly become close to an every down receiver, I think.
I mean, they're going to go through it pretty often.
So, I think it's definitely a concern to me, even though Sidney Rice has been ineffective.
I agree. I think losing Sidney Rice is more of a concern to me than losing Kaysen Williams is. Still, the threat of Sidney Rice is still there. He's been a good receiver. He's still a deep threat. He's caught some big balls. Losing him is not what you want to have happen right now, basically. It makes you think back that, I mean, the Seahawks drafted a wide receiver in the fourth round last year, and now he's been on his third team. If they would have hit on that pick, this would be somebody who could hypothetically step in there, and you kind of wish, using a fourth round pick on a wide receiver, you're assuming that they're going to be on the team for that season.
Yeah.
So it's kind of unfortunate that they didn't hit on that pick and don't have somebody who hadn't played that much who could step into that role. But in this case, it's undrafted free agent Jermaine Kearse. I think that also speaks on the other side to Pete Carroll and John Schneider's willingness to say, if you're not a good football player, you're going to go. We don't care what pick we use on you. So I think that's nice also.
Yeah, they understand sunk cost theory.
But it would be, you just hypothetically would have liked to have a receiver who was playing well.
Because
there are receivers who are playing well across the league who are drafted in that range. But I do think it'll be a big deal, and it means that getting Percy Harvin back earlier or on kind of a good timetable, which he's on, is pretty clutch. It's pretty huge.
If he was still out for another few weeks, then it would be a really big problem.
And it's really, it kind of feels more natural for Golden Tate to turn into a deep threat a little bit more than he has been, with Percy becoming the more like line of scrimmage receiver. Doug Baldwin is your third down receiver and your possession first down, picking up first down receiver. And Golden Tate being more of the deep threat. He can make those plays. He can make the aerial catches. He doesn't necessarily have the speed of some of those other players, but he can make those catches in space.
So I think what's interesting is this is really a preview of what we're going to see next season in all likelihood.
Yes.
You know, the assumption was, even before this injury, that Sidney Rice's days with the Seahawks were numbered and that he was probably going to be a cap casualty after this season. And now I think that's a virtual certainty. So you've got the next half of the season to see how this Harvin, Tate, Baldwin curse group does and figure out what, if anything, you might need to add to that going forward.
It's true. I mean, this offseason, Schneider and Carroll kind of showed that if there's a position of any concern, thinking of the defensive ends at this point, pass rushing, they went out after it like gangbusters. So if they see concern with the wide receivers, they might bring in three or four wide receivers. You never know there. But if it stays steady, this is, I think, what it would look like.
So, you know, that's kind of what we have to expect over the next few weeks. We'll see whether the Seahawks wide receivers, if more teams play them like St. Louis, where they really man up on the outside, on the edge, and put eight guys in the box, like the Rams did to try to shut down that running game. Can the wide receivers make plays, or was that just a matter, a function of Russell Wilson not having any time to throw on Monday night?
So at the Cal game last Saturday, something important did happen. The game was not necessarily that interesting. The Huskies won fairly easily. But you had to fulfill your bet to shotgun a beer. I think this is kind of crazy that we like blow this shotgunning a beer out of proportion, but it's because how upset you are about it, which I really like.
I just don't like shotgunning.
Were you nervous about it leading up to?
Nervous.
I think you were a little bit nervous. You ended up shotgunning a Rainier Tallboy.
I did.
And so you beforehand, I said 10 ounces, which I shouldn't have said. But I was like, you need to get at least 10 ounces down. And I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have said that you need to get it all. Because you were like, well, all I need to do is get 10 ounces. Basically, what
it wasn't like I was intending to spill. I just knew that was a reality because I just am not practiced or experienced in shotgunning beers.
Do you think that you'll practice more at the Colorado and the Wazoo game?
No.
No, absolutely not.
I have no interest in it.
Did you find yourself significantly drunker? Because I told you that we were going to watch the Seahawks game on Monday night at your house, and you seem to have forgotten that.
I forgot that, but no. I mean, I remember the rest of everything that happened in the game.
The unfortunate part was, so we had 12 cans of beer, and obviously a can versus a bottle, and we had to set one aside for you, tuck one away for Al, to shotgun, and so it was pretty much just you. I would have been in there. I would have really liked to have shown you how it was done. But, so we took a video, and in the video, right when you crack it open, so much beer comes pouring out. I don't know if you're not familiar with gravity. You're holding it sideways and not vertical. Beer flows down.
Thanks.
So much beer comes pouring out. And then you shotgun a few ounces. And then there's in the Vine video, which we'll definitely post on the website, Al agreed to link to from his Twitter also, specifically the Vine, not just the podcast.
I think we would have had to post that on Saturday.
Okay. You think it's too late?
Yeah.
Come on.
It'll be within the podcast.
Oh, my God. You made an agreement for this. Anyway. So you shotgun, I don't know, not much. And then there's you kind of spitting out a little bit. And then you kind of casually drink the rest of it. It was not the best display of shotgunning.
I just don't understand the upside of shotgunning.
Getting not drunker. What do you mean you don't understand the upside of shotgunning?
That's not why I drink beer. That's not why I drink anything.
You're drinking. You made an argument for Coors Light, and now you're telling me that you drink beer for the taste?
Yeah, Coors Light is refreshing.
Coors Light is refreshing? How can you do those two things at the same time?
I don't need to answer to you.
How do you need to answer to? God and the IRS. That's all I answer to when talking about Coors Light. Oh my God.
I just don't see why you would... Why you would want me to drink in a way that I don't want to. Why?
Because of how upset you get about it also. And it's and that's really funny. It was just a hilarious experience for everybody involved.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it so much.
Was this better than getting hit in the balls with a snowball?
Everything is better than that.
Everything in the world. Jury duty.
Oh, without question.
What if you had to be on a trial for 2 weeks? 2 week trial versus getting hit one time with the balls of the snowball.
Probably take the trial.
You'd take the trial? Wow. Man, I would take jury. There are a lot of things that I would do to avoid going to jury duty.
It's strange that you went right there. That's usually not the outcome of a bet.
Of a bet?
Yeah. Having to do jury duty.
That would be a really good bet. Having to do jury duty. There's some legality involved. Well, so it's nice to have a Seahawks game. It's been a long time since we've had a home Seahawks game. So it's nice to have one and have a chance to hang out down there, especially since the Huskies are on bye. And then we're kind of winding down on the season as far as the Huskies go. Just two games left. It doesn't feel like it's been that long, but just two home games left.
Yeah, the Colorado game is going to be really the last hurrah before the Apple Cup.
And the Apple Cup, we're going to have to do it up big.
Although we're not going to have a lot of time for that, are we?
It's an early game at noon, I believe.
I don't know if we ever looked that up.
We could be there at 6 a.m.
You couldn't be there at 6 p.m. on Saturday.
Oh, no. I was not excited for the game.
Oh, that was it.
I got it together. Everybody was really mad at me because I was hungover from the night before, deep into the day, and I kept telling you that I would get it together. And did I get it together?
Yeah, I suppose so.
I was an admirable part of the tailgate.
After we barely got a parking spot to tailgate, period. We could have been tailgating, like, over by I-5.
That was the same.
We were this close to that.
Over by I-5. That would have been fun. View of I-5 in the distance.
Yeah, I love hearing the rumble of cars overhead. That's the fumes coming down that really adds to my tailgate experience.
I like the nighttime tailgating, too. I think it's underrated. I like tailgating at night. And then we were there until the very end. Everybody else had left. It was kind of like we were just hanging out in a parking lot drinking.
An experience you're familiar with.
It's true. It's a great experience. But we can be there at... I mean, we showed up for that Oregon game. We left at 6 a.m. We can leave at any time. There's no amount of time that you can have to tailgate. It's however much time you choose to have.
So if you like tailgate in the dark, we could do that in the morning.
Morning tailgate in the dark and having breakfast for that tailgate, it was great. We have to do that again.
It was a lot of eating in a short period of time, though, between breakfast and grilling.
It's true. I couldn't eat breakfast plus have a burger and a bratwurst.
Yeah, that's too much.
I think the issue is not necessarily that much eating, but it's all of it eating plus 12 beers in you, you know? So,
well, I wasn't necessarily counting on 12 beers in my case. That's more you.
Well, it takes up a lot of room in your stomach and makes you less hungry. You got to get something in there, but you don't need all that. So we'll obviously talk about that one as it comes.
Let's wrap things up quickly with fantasy.
Yeah, it's a weird fantasy week lately. There's just not much out there on the waiver wire. I think that there's another six teams on bye, and a lot of really good teams on bye. I have two Broncos players, Demaryius Thomas and Knowshon Moreno, and it's just like the cupboard is bare, you know, after that. And then you look on waivers, and I'm just looking around for something. Last week, I felt like there were a lot of players on waivers that I could have brought in and could be at least helpful for one game. You got a pretty good game out of Jarrett Boykin. But looking around for the potential waiver players this week, there is nothing out there that I'm excited about. Marvin Jones is one. He caught four touchdowns, which obviously you want four touchdowns, but I'm not going to count on Marvin Jones to score four touchdowns going forward. He's somebody who I don't even think is worth a waiver claim. Quarterbacks-wise, Terrell Pryor had that long run, but he only ended up with a 15 fantasy-wise, and that play was more than a 15. He went down for the rest of the game.
I think it was a 15.
Yes, a 90-yard run plus a touchdown. So it was a 15, and then he had 88 yards and two picks after that. So Terrell Pryor is somebody who, I mean, if you can count on a 90-yard run from him every game, then that's nice. Kenny Stills is somebody who, I mean, he's coming off a few zeros, but Kenny Stills had a big game and looks like he might be a bigger part of the Saints offense, potentially with Jimmy Graham going out. He's probably the only player who I think might be worth a claim. But even then, starting Kenny Stills, everything could go to somebody else in that Saints offense. You have no idea. I mean, he had three catches. It's
all or
like,
nothing.
It's all or nothing. It's do they score a touchdown? Are they going to get a long catch? Otherwise, you could get three catches for 16 yards. So the Saints receivers, aside from Jimmy Graham, I'm always concerned about and never really that excited about. Otherwise out there, it's kind of just a lot of quarterbacks. I think at this point, most fantasy players have their quarterback situation figured out. Going into the bye, I think that Alex Smith is an interesting player. Going into the bye, he's had some really good games. He's somebody who I would be comfortable starting this week.
I mean, I think there's a lot of options out there at quarterback.
There are a lot of options at quarterback. I think Jason Campbell was really good last week. I don't know if I would necessarily start Jason Campbell against Baltimore, but, I mean, he started against the best defense in the league last week and got a 20. So Jason Campbell's definitely an option. Jake Locker's an option. Those are just one-game filling quarterbacks. They're not the answer. And I think it's kind of the same with the receivers who are out there. Whereas last week, I think, I mean, I don't know if Andre Ellington was still out there last week, but Andre Ellington is a long-term play. Jarrett Boykin is probably going to be a good play for the rest of the season.
Can we talk about some breaking news really quickly?
Breaking
I know
news.
We've already got a lot.
Dun, 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 dun.
A report here from Pro Football Talk that the NFL is considering negating touchdowns for taunting penalties strictly in response to Golden Tate's epic taunt on Monday night.
Oh, I hate that. You should be able to taunt. We didn't talk about this on the podcast, but that was classic taunting. It was great. How excited were you when you saw Golden Tate start taunting? The flag was thrown. It doesn't mean anything. Who cares?
It meant some field position, and he nearly taunted his way out of the touchdown. That, to me, is my concern.
That was the worst part of the taunting. He started the taunt a little bit too early. But the taunting is better when you start it early.
But again, people who dislike taunting on, like, the sheer, like, oh, show some class grounds. Like,
yeah.
No, those are the worst people in the world.
I was like, there's no class about it. Janoris Jenkins was talking about Steve Smith's family last week. You know, it doesn't matter. Janoris Jenkins was probably talking to Golden Tate all game, and then Golden Tate breaks out and gets this touchdown over Janoris Jenkins. You have to let that happen. Taunting is a natural part of football. When you have people matching up like that, you have to let them taunt a little.
I don't know if I agree with all of that.
It's like banning, you know, jibber-jabber. You know, it's like banning people talking to each other.
How would you define jibber-jabber?
I don't know.
Do you have a textbook definition for that? Look, I just don't think that we need the referees to play a larger role
especially
in NFL football.
Negating a touchdown.
That's way too extreme.
Does college negate touchdowns for taunting?
Oh, of course they do, because everything college does is wrong.
I agree. Why would the NFL should never emulate college football. In every situation, except for... No,
what,
the NFL should
trying
never...
to not pay their players anything?
Yeah, I don't want them to do that. The NFL should never emulate college. College should always be trying to emulate the NFL. But that Golden Tate taunt was a good taunt. You think Roger Goodell was just watching that and was like, this is terrible.
That makes me even more happy about what
about
happened.
Taunting? Yeah. If it angered Roger Goodell, that's what you want. Well, anyway, I'm pro-taunt. And I'm against... rules against taunting. I had a concern when he was running, and I was like, oh, crap, does that negate the touchdown? But I was thinking of college.
Yeah.
So, thank God. I mean, it won us the game. Won the game for us.
We also were victims of the single worst taunting call in the history of taunting calls. Which it wasn't technically taunting,
the
Jake Locker touchdown,
the ball in the air.
Where he just was celebrating the touchdown, was doing nothing to any opposing players. It was really, he got penalized for... enjoying success, for being excited about doing something positive.
It's true.
It makes me viscerally angry to this day.
It almost made me get into a fight with BYU fans also.
Who had nothing to do with that call.
But you know.
No, I do
they
not
They were still
know.
The beneficiaries of it, and they didn't... They should have been sympathetic.
Should they have apologized to you?
I don't know. So anyway... like always, we close with our Jermaine Kearse and Vic Ballard comparison. I just read this funny, the Jermaine Kearse ESPN projection. Kearse, the Seahawks' fourth wide receiver, isn't fantasy relevant.
Nobody tell Caden. He scored a zero.
This last week he had a zero, two targets, zero catches. So Jermaine Kearse for the season is still at 18, 19, 21. I believe Vic Ballard has an 8. So Jermaine Kearse didn't pull away anymore this week, but they remain at the same stagnant.
All right, thanks for listening.
Thank you.